the Mount Everest isn't as hard to climb as you think. The people that take Mount Everest always take a guide. And most people that are starting their own independent business, they're taking Everest all by themselves.
Mm.
And then they wonder why they fail.
Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I'm talking with my friend Kevin, who's an independent film producer in Dallas. And we have several questions about LLCs that we dive into. We were just having a normal conversation, and we thought we'd record it. So these are some of the questions we deal with. Should you have an LLC for each major project? In film, and you also see it on TV, they create individual LLCs for each project. Should you wait to become profitable to form an LLC? And do you have to be profitable after 3 years to be legit? So the reason this came up was I have all of my side hustles under one LLC, including the podcast, including Grow Nut Trees. Grow Nut Trees is getting big enough that I want to split it out into a separate LLC, but it funds most of the rest of the side hustles. We talk about the tax benefits. We talk about either or and everything else. So disclaimer, this is not tax advice. This is not accounting advice. This is for entertainment purposes only. We just recorded a conversation that we were having, and consult your tax or financial advisor for more information if you have questions.
Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I have my friend Kevin with me. And since we were having a conversation about small businesses and LLCs, I thought it would be interesting to have. So welcome, Kevin.
Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate this opportunity.
Sure. So give a little background about what you're doing and what you're using an LLC for.
Well, I'm a film producer. I don't work in a studio or with Hollywood. I'm completely independent. But I am using my LLC for developing a company that then also allows me to produce individual feature films. So, in other words, I have Dallas Media Productions as my base company operations. And then each script, each project that I take on to do a film on or full feature and like to get it up to the theaters, we'll have a separate LLC for each one for the development. So the purpose for that is so that way if any legalities go against the project, it can't hurt my parent company because that's a separate entity and it stays locked into the individual LLC that I'm working with.
So how's it work nowadays with basically, you know, theaters are closing down because of streaming. Everything is going streaming. And since COVID, the movie biz has been either going to just rote recycled stuff or they're going towards it's just streaming only. I mean, you know, I don't even understand how AMC or any of them are in business anymore. So how do you fit into all that?
Well, I think that's a really broad picture. Yes, a lot of thing is going streaming. However, I think there's a lot of factors that affect theatrical releases and affect people going to see films in the theater.
Okay.
A lot of people have wonderful television systems. Some people even have the 8K televisions that are kind of out there. A lot of people have at least four. I have a 4K.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Yeah, it basically is just the higher resolution. And a lot of filmmakers, especially in the independent world, will shoot like on Reds or some other kind of professionalized camera that will shoot in 4K. Sometimes they'll even get the newer cameras that will shoot in 8K. And what they'll do is they'll be able to then condense it down for even people that are shooting, you know, watching on 1080p type televisions. And the advantage that you have on that is just when you take a large picture and shrink it down, you get a much better, higher resolution.
Right.
And so people that are even watching it on 1080 feel like they're getting a very vast experience because they've shot it in 8K and they're condensing it down.
So didn't Peter Jackson do that on the Hobbit movies?
Yeah.
As opposed to the Lord of the Rings movies, he moved to that higher... He was either shooting in a higher frame rate or he was shooting in 8K or something like that.
Yeah, and usually you'll shoot in a higher frame rate if you're shooting like slow-mo, like 120 per second.
Right.
And you know you're going to be doing that scene slow motion, so you want a nice smooth, you don't want any kind of jittery or jumpiness with that.
Sure.
But a lot of times they're shooting 8K and RAW so that they can just get all the data and all the information. So when it gets into editing and they get into color correction, everything just runs smoother and everything looks really good. And then they push it out to the people. Right now, they're still pushing it out to 720 and 1080 range.
Mm-hmm.
There are some still being able to submit out to 4K because some more and more people are buying 4K TVs. They're not seeing as much of the 8K TVs out there right now, but at least they would be able to handle it at regular resolution at that point. But you know, they're going to look at putting out cameras that can maybe do 16K or whatever. So right now, it's still kind of being shot really well and condensing down to people that have more than 720 and 1080 at the moment.
Okay.
But so, the thing is that when you have people that have this equipment, okay, and they have their recliners and they have their cup holders and they have their wonderful areas, and some of them have like popcorn machines in their little dens or whatever like this. So you have more and more people that have homes that have designed for entertainment,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so when you can sit there and you can even rent off of Amazon Prime or some, or you know have a Netflix subscription or some kind of a streaming deal, Hulu, whoever, and you can sit there with your surround sound speakers and you can sit in your recliner and you can have your light controlled areas and it's all, you can feel it all right there and you don't have to pay extra for all that expensive popcorn and candy and soda. You got it all right there in your little little fridge there. Why really go out to a theater when you've got that experience right there?
Right. Yeah, and before COVID, we were getting to the point where the theaters around us in Kansas City and Lawrence were, they switched to recliners.
Yeah.
That with, you know, where you could stop somewhere along in the, they were automated, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also switched to assigned seating.
Right.
So, you know, right before COVID, it was about the time with, I think the last movie I saw in the theater was Avengers, the last Infinity War movie.
Right.
But mm-hmm. at some point, right before COVID. You know, so they were moving towards that.
Mm-hmm.
But
they wanted to give you that at-home experience in the theater.
Yeah. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. I knew some people that fell asleep because, hey, you know, we reclined back and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're out. And I think Audrey fell asleep in the theater. But, you know, so that just shows you how riveting Avengers Infinity War was. But anyway,
yeah.
So how do you fit into all of that, since we're seeing a slash with film budgets, we're seeing everything start to move to streaming? I mean, where do you fit into the pie?
Well, I think the thing to always remember is that audiences love good stories.
Mm-hmm.
They always will,
right?
No matter what.
Mm-hmm.
The studios have such a high budget, high cost situation
mm-hmm.
to their staff and their crews, and they have union issues, they have diversity issues that they have to deal with because they have to have certain percentages of people in all their films, and they have to try to who's this and who's that and all
this
stuff.
Now they have to have much more higher percentages.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know, when you have all of these different dynamics
right.
to play, that's all cost involved.
Uh-huh.
And there's always planning and scheduling and everything. So the challenge you have there is they know that the audiences are craving a certain content. They want mm-hmm. a certain look, a certain image. They want to feel in that theater those speakers punting into their bodies and just feel the emotions and see the imagery. So they know that they have to have the best cameras. They have to have the best equipment. They have to have the best, most talented of everything in front of the camera, behind the camera. And that all comes with a cost. And they take a lot of gambles with that in the studios because, yeah, you would think, okay, the Avenger thing, they're kind of figuring it out. Disney's been doing a lot of stuff with that. And it goes out in the theaters, and you expect a certain return because, well, people love superheroes. They love to see that. And if you give them what they want to hear and you give them what they want to see, you should at least be able to break even.
Sure.
That would be the hope. Now,
right.
I know there's been some question of that being able to do that. Of course, a lot of people don't understand, too, that they have a marketing arm merchandising arm.
Well, sure.
And, no, and so even if they come out with the box office, say, well, this movie cost them $150 million, and they only did $100 million at the box office in their opening weekend. That must have been a failure type situation. Well, not really, because when you look at their worldwide and you look at their first-year run of that film, they've made their money.
Right.
And then you add merchandising of Little Supermen or whatever. all over the dolls and stuff in the stores. They're making their money. They don't cry for them. Okay.
So how do you fit into that? In Dallas. You're not in Hollywood,
right?
Are you just one of those production companies that you see in the credits at the end, where this company did this graphics, this company did that graphics, this company did blah blah or right. whatever? I mean, are your stuff lower budget? How does that work, and how do you fit into that?
Yeah, usually as an independent filmmaker, you're usually working with smaller budgets.
Mm-hmm.
You're also having to really focus on the fact that the script's got to be king, because you're most likely working with unknown talent, scripts that aren't, tied into marketing or they're not tied into very audience recognizable things.
Right.
You're not going to do the next Marvel film. You're not going to do a thing on Titanic. You're not, unless it's maybe like some kind of a documentary.
So, so you're not going to be able to do the budget like that. What is the current, what's the current hot stuff?
I would say definitely horror. Horror is going to be.
Horror.
Kind of like a John Carpenter, Halloween.
Thriller horror.
It can be anything.
Is it M. Night Shyamalan or is it Halloween?
Yeah, it could be a Halloween. It could be a Shyamalan. It could be any kind of thing that says this is a horror genre, because that has a niche audience out there that will go watch anything horror if they have to climb over hot coals to go see it. I mean, they just have that following.
That's weird. I don't get that, but okay.
Yeah, but I mean, they do.
I don't watch stuff like that. I like M. Night Shyamalan type stuff, but
But I mean, the thing is, like myself, I'm not really a big horror person,
right?
But I'll make a horror film.
Yeah, you're horrible anyway.
Yeah. But the thing is, I'll make a horror film, if that's what the demographic is going to take. Because as a first time producer creating a professional level product, which is a $3 million film,
sure,
I need to be able to produce something that I'm going to draw an audience so I don't belly up. I've got to be able to produce something that I know that I've got an audience that's going to watch it, and I'm going to get that money in. Once I have several productions, I can start being a little bit more flexible and doing a rom-com that isn't really doing as well right now in the marketplace, and maybe a Western at the same time, which is still kind of doing something
that
because of Yellowstone
overlaps,
and all that kind of stuff.
That still overlaps and turns into horror.
If there is an element to that, then you can grab that audience.
That's the twist.
That's the twist. Exactly. Yeah.
I've noticed that. Like, if you go to Walmart, the videos, what videos are left, right, in the video section,
right,
are all the direct video that you never seen. I mean, they're never been in the movie,
right?
And it's like,
and more likely they're from independent producers.
Yeah,
or production companies are independent.
Bruce Willis, before he retired because of his health problems,
right,
he was like in 4 movies in 1 year,
right,
and some of those he had no significant part in, and they just used his name because he had a
to get an
cameo,
audience,
right?
Yeah, to get an audience in there.
I mean, but they're all the ones in the aisle at Walmart are all horror.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this okay. So let's. People are going, why are you talking about this? We usually hear about homesteading. We usually hear about side hustles and stuff. The reason this came up was last night we were talking about LLCs and business and small business. So one of the things I noticed was that in Last Man Standing, the Tim Allen show, that each year in the show they have a different production company. So my question to you was, is he just like using it as a tax dump, running up a bunch of expenses, writing the expenses off, and then dumping the LLC and turning it into another LLC the next year? And then, because I was like, how does that work if you don't get to the rumor or the urban legend is that if you don't make a profit in 3 years, then the IRS will suddenly see you as illegit or something like that, and then all of a sudden you're not legit anymore and you claim expenses and stuff. You said that's not the case, right?
Well, it really, I mean, I'm not saying they can't do that, but I'm also saying that they will most likely not. they understand certain businesses. They understand that it's not that, like, you just can't open up a business tomorrow and you're going to be a multimillionaire. I mean, it can happen, like, sure, for some of the dot-coms and stuff. It kind of can happen for internet-type people. But for the majority of basic businesses, it's a 5, 10, 15-year projection. Mm-hmm. What they want to see when they look at your taxes is an intent to make a profit. Mm-hmm. Now, they can come in at any time when they audit you for whatever reason, and they can be dinks, and they can basically say, no, you're not trying to make a profit, and they can close you down. Whether that's 2 years, 3 years, 1 year, 10 years. I mean, they can come in anytime they want to. They're the IRS. Exactly. Because, you know, they it's their money and their mindset. So, yeah, you know, they're going to do whatever they want to do.
So, quick break here. You probably wonder, why are we talking about film when most of the time we talk about homesteading, we talk about side hustles or whatever else? So Kevin and I were having a conversation last night about side hustles, LLCs, and things, and some of the conversation I thought you would like to hear about, because this podcast is more than just homesteading. It's also about how to design your intentional life, and it includes side hustles and everything else. So if you like what we're doing, shoot me a tip on Cash App or Venmo at Thriving the Future. Go to our website, go to the stuff page, buy some of the stuff we have out there. We've got links to Amazon things, or click on one of the things from Amazon and then buy your own stuff. We will get credit for everything that you buy on Amazon for the next 24 hours. It doesn't cost you anything else, but it sure helps the podcast. Let's get back to the episode.
So, but the truth of the matter is, most of the people aren't significant enough to waste the time to do the litigation to try to stop you from getting a tax thing.
So let's talk about the strategy, because this is something we talked about last night that I really wanted to capture on here, is why would you do that? And it all depends on your strategy.
Yeah,
and
it comes down to that.
You had said some interesting things to me that I wanted to share. So
yeah, I mean, like with Tim Allen, I don't know really what all of his motivations are.
Yeah, I'm just using an example.
And he's had a lot of other issues from his conservative viewpoints and all this kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying you couldn't just dump one LLC and start a new one and other things like this as a tax shelter type format. You definitely could. Most people don't start an LLC for that purpose. Hmm. Most people are going to have an LLC because they are trying to make a profit. They got an idea. They got a business that they want to see successful. They want the success from that. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to make a profit. They're trying to get people interested in their idea, their product, their service, whatever it is. And they want to maybe not necessarily become multimillionaires at the most. Most of them are looking at doing it from the perspective of, hey, if I can bring in an extra $500 a month by doing this on the side, you know, to help my family, then great. But if somebody would come along and say, well, I'll pay you know, $2 million for that project or that idea or that service, whatever, and they go and they do something more with it, that's even greater. Mm-hmm. If they can all of a sudden have an audience just go crazy, like it goes viral, and that business all of a sudden you're shipping shoes everywhere, whatever it is you're creating for your business, that's also gravy. But people don't necessarily think, okay, I'm going to do this LLC so I can get more money off of my taxes. Is it true you can? Yeah, because when you own a business, you are given the right as a business owner to take the cost of developing that business and writing it off on your taxes as a loss or a reduction to the cost, offsetting the profit. But the thing is when you do your Schedule C or your, like what I have to do, because I have the LLC, I have to do, it's not a sole proprietorship, it's more of a partnership, I have to do a K-1. With my regular taxes, but what it does is it shows, okay, this is what my business operations are. Mm-hmm. This is what my intent is. Even if I lost money,
right?
Okay, I might have had an expense come in. I had to replace computers for whatever reason because I was expanding or something, and it cost me $10,000. Well, right. I only done like $3,000 in sales, so my company lost $7,000, and I'm going to show that and take that away from any other income I have, and it might give me more tax money back from the IRS.
Well, you should get credit instead of just, you know, if you were doing this as a whatever.
Right.
If you were doing this, just roll your own business without an LLC,
right,
then you're not going to get any credit for that at all.
Right. You have to show viability that you're in a business.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the thing is that as you do these processes, then the next year the IRS would say, well, I'd like to see in the second year that maybe you'd had $5,000 in sales. You may still have had things that cost you $8,000, $9,000, $10,000. So you still may have lost money, but we want to see that growth. We want to see that your business is trying to do business.
Yeah, but if you are expanding, you know, like you're getting into, you know,
growing, like you have to.
Yeah. Then you're gonna have more expense.
Exactly.
Unless you take it and you, like, you know, so I've got the podcast, I've got the trees, and then this year I've started buying websites and then selling websites.
Yeah, so you may have expanded by opening up your pasture for a lot more trees, but you might have had to bring an investor on.
Right.
And the investor might have to say, okay, I'll give you $100,000 so you can get these trees, get this planted so we can get this thing moving.
Right.
Well, that's automatically a liability on your company. You may only have turned enough trees the year before to be $20,000. So now you're actually $80,000 in the hole.
Right.
But they expect that because they want to see you growing as a business. They just want to get you to the point to where you got a big enough company, enough trees selling, enough podcasts developing, all that kind of stuff, to where they can say, oh, wow, maybe 5 years, 6 years, 10 years down the road, oh, now all of a sudden you don't have to grow as much. You don't have to expand as much. You don't have to bring on as much investment because now you've kind of got yourself established. And guess what? You had $20,000 in profit this year. Now you can pay me.
Yeah.
That's what they want to see. They don't mind if it's 10 years. It doesn't have to be three. They don't mind if it's 10 years. They just want to be able to look at your taxes and see a growth throughout the years.
Sure. But at the same time, say I'm going into a different vertical, right? Like I said, I'm going into website design or something, right?
Sure.
And buying and selling websites.
Right.
Is it better to flip that into or start that up as a separate LLC?
Yes.
Because it's, you know, because I remember when I did my taxes, it was like, what is your vertical?
Right.
And it's like, okay, well, I've got a podcast and I've got trees.
Right.
Right now, those are all in one LLC.
Technically, those should be in two.
Uh-huh.
Because here's the reason why. What is an LLC's actual purpose?
To protect you from liability.
Exactly. So if you had two separate LLCs and something happened and someone said you screwed them on their trees...
Yeah.
And they want to sue you and take you to court because people can take you to court and sue you for anything, even if you had an ironclad contract and you win the thing.
Yeah,
they can still do it. Guess what that's going to do to your podcast revenue?
Mm-hmm.
If you had them both together, that could ruin both businesses.
Mm-hmm.
If somehow some slick lawyer got in there and got some judge who's leaning for like anti-business were to say, no, you on purposely did this and screwed your tree business, you still at least have your podcast. They can't touch it. It's a separate thing.
Right. That makes sense.
That's why the LLCs were developed. That's why I have a Dallas Media Productions LLC, and I have the new horror film, The Caregivers movie.
So every time you spin up a new production, you create another LLC.
Every new script that I go to produce, it has a brand new LLC attached
to
it.
So that would be analogous to Tim Allen making each season a different...
Right. Well, and then another reason for him to have another. I mean, I'm not saying he's Miami.
Yeah, I'm
trying
not,
to do some tax.
I'm using some assumption
because I don't know all of the details.
Yeah, I don't know any of the details.
But here's the thing to think about too. People are people,
strange.
And people sometimes can't get along with each other.
Yeah.
And they'll get a production company in there, and all after about halfway through, they're going to say, "Well, you're not doing it the way I want to see this done."
Yeah.
Well, this is what we have to do in production, and then there's a dispute.
Well, everybody's sue happy anyway.
Right. And so the next thing you know, there's like, "I'm not dealing with you this next time around when we have a new contract. I'm not signing a contract with you. I'm going to go with this production company."
Right. So do you have...
It may just simply because they just can't get along.
Right.
And
so people talk
Hollywood?
About...
No.
Back to LLCs. So people talk about having, you know, your small, isolated LLC and then having a parent LLC. How does that work?
Every state's different on that, and you need to check into that. And that's why a lot of people that have small businesses, they don't really have good legal advice.
Sure.
And they don't have good accounting advice.
Right.
And the reason they say, well, we can't afford it. Can you afford to lose?
Uh-huh.
That's another point.
Well, if you're only making $1,000 revenue,
but that's still $1,000 revenue. And the thing is that if you don't have proper legal advice, proper contracts, stuff like this, and somebody comes in and sues you, now you don't even have that.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Take your whole business; it's gone.
Yeah.
Where if you had the protection, okay, and you had the legal advice, you had the right things in place. All of a sudden, now the next year, that $1,000 now has the freedom to become a $5,000. The next year, it can become a $10,000. And the next thing you know, somebody's walking in on your property, going like, "I think this is a great operation. I'll give you $100 million for this. Get out of my face."
Sure.
Okay, but you can't do that if you don't have the rest of going.
Mm-hmm.
So most businesses fail because they're undercapitalized. Why are they undercapitalized? Because they really don't know what they need to know before they get into it. But the point is simply like this. If you simply know that what you really want to do, that business you really have in your heart and mind to do,
right,
protect it at all cost.
Uh-huh.
and then put your heart and soul into it and drive it as hard as you can.
Right.
Because if you've got the protection on the backside and you've got the right thinking on the backside, all you have to focus on is the front side, which is getting the product out, get the service done, tell the people what they need to know. And these guys back here that you're paying them maybe a retainer of about maybe $100 a month or something like that to kind of, oh, I need a contract for the, oh, yeah, here's a contract. Here you go. There you go.
So do you do
Can you send a letter out to this person? Oh, yeah, I'll send a letter out.
Yeah. So do you do your LLC in Texas since you live here? Or do you do, are you one of these people that does like a Delaware LLC?
Nope, it's a Texas one. And the reason I like that is because in Texas, you don't have to renew it. Once you do the LLC and you pay the $150, done.
Yeah, Kansas is the same
right.
way, too.
But there's other states, like California and other states,
that
you have to renew it every single year.
Yeah, okay.
And they'll charge you the $800 or whatever every year to have that LLC.
Uh-huh.
But in Texas, what? Once and done.
So it was like $150?
I think it was $150 we paid last time.
Yeah, it was $166 in Kansas.
Yeah, but it's a one-time done.
Yeah.
That's a small investment to keep your butt...
Yeah, and you don't need LegalZoom because you know all of it's automated on the state
website. Right.
And you can even get your EIN on there.
Right. They usually send that to you at the same time.
Yeah. And then
and sometimes some states might have an extra fee to get the EIN.
A lot of them don't. I think it might have been $25 to get the EIN.
Right. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. It's a state by state deal.
EIN being the tax thing, so you're not using your own Social Security number as a tax ID.
Right.
And that really you only need it if you're going to have employees, but you should have it to obfuscate so you're not using your own Social Security number. Because every time you do something with your LLC, they're going to ask you for your Social Security number or your EIN.
Right.
And you don't want to give them your Social Security number because we're already too overexposed with that now.
Right. And the thing is, too, is that you're doing the LLC so that you can protect yourself.
Right.
But you're also doing this other stuff because what did we say that the IRS wants to see? That you're trying to make a profit.
Right.
Well, guess what's another thing that shows them you're trying to make a profit? You have an EIN number.
Yeah.
You have a bank account that's
sure.
with your business name. You have this, you have this, you have this. So if as long as you are doing the paint-by-the-numbers approach on a small business, when the IRS were to, for some reason, they just had a slow news day and they decided to want to audit your system... So what? I'm doing everything by the book.
Hmm.
They can't do nothing to me.
Right.
I mean, they could say, well, I don't think you can really claim this. Well, maybe I could. And you could fight them on it. Or they could say, oh, I'm not going to do this. What it's going to be, but it might affect your refund, maybe $20. You know, I mean, it's a small business situation. You're not going to have too much damage there if they want to come in.
Yeah, so how do you do that? Because I did the LLC on my taxes because I'm sole. Yeah, but you've got a partnership.
So it's I do a K-1.
Yeah.
A K-1 under the tax filing basically is similar to a sole proprietorship type of the Schedule C.
Yeah, but how do you separate it? Or
We use Tax Act, so we can go on online and do it.
Right.
But you just fill in the blanks.
Yeah, you file it separately, separate from your
regular taxes. What you do is you basically the K-1 takes a look at your business.
Yeah.
What did you bring in? What did you let go of? All that kind of stuff. Who owns what?
Yeah.
All your partnership stuff. And then you take that last numbers and you incorporate it into your 1040, which there's a line for K-1 partnership in there. You put that in there as a loss or a gain, and then that affects your refund at the end on your 1040.
Okay. Any parting advice you have?
Yeah, I mean, definitely if you're interested in getting your own business, research it. Know what if you have mentors that have done this thing, I highly recommend getting a mentor. With my own production company, I was, I didn't know who to turn to for investors. I didn't know anything about what's developmental fund. I mean, that was the one that really caught me the biggest for developing my film. And it's because I knew enough. I did research on the internet and all this kind of stuff, read books. But the thing is that you got to be careful who's telling you what, because there's a lot of theory out there, but there's very little truth.
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me when you were telling me this story was that you had to have analytics.
Yeah.
And it's like, analytics, you haven't done the movie yet.
Yeah.
How do you have analytics on an audience when you haven't done the production yet?
Well, and it's almost true in every business, because the reason I had to have the analytics is so that when my production rep goes to the distributors,
sure,
he has data to show them projecting, kind of like a stock portfolio kind of thing. We project that the stock, based on what it's done, what it's going to do again.
Yeah, no, but how do you know what it's done?
You got people that have years of experience, uh-huh, as mentorships, who have done this over and over and over again.
Uh-huh.
And they look at what you have. They read your script. They look at your pitch deck. They look at all of the data that you can give them. They look at what your genre is. They look at the marketplace. They look at what the trends are, who's buying what tickets for what, yeah, movies. And they say, based on what we know,
right,
we can project, like a weatherman.
Mm-hmm.
We can project, based on what we know and what we've seen and the trends that are occurring, your $3 million costed product's probably going to turn $20-25 million in the stores or in the theaters or whatever. And there's other businesses that can use similar things. They can bring in like a person that does agricultural products, and they can say, well, based on the marketplace of what we've seen, this amount of people are buying in this part of the country these kind of trees. And we're seeing in the past that these people in this part of the country have been buying these kind of trees. And we're seeing yada, 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 yada. So if we generate your portfolio, your analytics, to show who's your audience of what product in what area, then you can adjust your marketing, and you can bring in a marketing team, and they can do social media and build websites and put out with TikTok and Instagram and with Facebook, and like I've done with mine and with my film. And they will say, let's do what these people are looking for and drive the audience to you, to your site.
Right.
Because when it gets out to distribution and it goes out to the theaters, goes to streaming, goes to all these systems, you have a baked in audience hungry to see what you've got. You've got a baked in audience that knows they want these trees, and these are the trees they're buying. If you're selling certain shirts like UNTUCKit does, kind of thing, they did the analytics, they see who the audience was, where that marketing place was going to happen, and then they go into those cities and they buy little shops, they put these up there, and boom, they go on their online site and they get an analytics on who shops for these kind of shirts on the online, what kind of visuals do they need, what kind of things are they looking for when they're looking at this, and they design a website based off of this analytics, and then that hopes that these projections based on what has happened in the past, what they are hoping the future is going to have, hopefully gels and everything wonderfully works together.
It still sounds like BS, but yeah. So how do they do it? You were saying that
it's the same kind of BS as like with prospectus on stocks.
Yeah, I know. So you were saying that that you told me some interesting things about the factoids about horror and the, mm-hmm, audience and who it appeals to.
Yeah, according to the analytics that we did, about 18 to 25, 18 to 30 range males,
uh-huh,
like horror. And they tend to do a little bit higher than 50% toward wanting to watch horror on streaming. But women in the upper 50-ish range will drag their husband to watch a horror in the theater.
50-year-old women?
Yeah, 50-year-old women will drag their husbands to watch a horror film in a theater.
Well, what about 20-year-old women?
20-year-old women tend to watch it because they're with their boyfriends sitting in front of Netflix or whatever like that, watching streaming. But the thing is that the thing that's fascinating to me, even outside of that and this relationship to the trends, talking about trending, is that a lot of the ladies that I've been talking about that I, you know, other filmmakers and stuff that I'm going to be doing a horror film here in Dallas in the fall called The Caregivers. They and I explain it to them. They go, oh, my God, I can't wait for this to come out. I love horror. It had been boggling my mind how many women in the younger women age group especially love that horror genre, like Rosemary's Baby and all that kind of stuff. It just doesn't make sense.
That puzzles me. It blows me away. I don't know anybody like that.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting when I would talk to these other people about what I'm producing, these women coming back saying, oh man, I love horror. I want to see that. And I get young men, you know, what I expect to have say that to me because that's kind of fitting into the demographics. But the young women, that really kind of surprises me. But there's a market for that. And the thing that's really interesting, you know, there's a good market for the horror here in America. But the thing that's interesting is when I was talking to my production rep, he was saying, well, I've got people right now in Argentina and Chile and Brazil a lot of those different that are hungry for this product right now. I mean, if we had it, I could get it right now. I can get it in the theaters in those countries right now. Mm. And so there's also that international market that you have to think about, you know. And a lot of businesses don't necessarily start out that way as a small business, but it really depends on who your team is. I mean, I was very fortunate after 2 years here struggling, trying to figure out who was I going to get me to give me money for this film, and that I was able to, through a trading class, meet a gentleman who's been doing this for over 25 years with Moving Pictures Media Group, Ray Ellingson. And he did a thing with... he's made lots of movies over the last 25 years. He's done The Time Traveler's Wife. He's done both of the Cowboy and Alien connections. He has a sister company, a separate LLC, sister company to their main company that owns the number one IP of comic books in the world. And so this guy is connected. In fact, their very first feature production he did of his first film was with Kevin Smith, the director. So he's also very connected. So I was very, very, very fortunate.
Yeah,
he's my mentor. I'm very fortunate that he was interested in my script just from talking to him about what I want to put together. The genre he knows is going to be at least really highly attended, and the projections are really good, that it should have some good financial gain out of the whole thing. So, I mean, I recommend anybody that starts their own business, whatever it is, seek credible advice.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's easy just to turn to YouTube or whatever like this, and someone's going to tell you how to do this thing. And then if you really were to research them, how much have they actually done it, and how much of it's just teaching and theory, okay? Not that they can't be right. I'm not saying they're not right, but just, you know, get multiple people telling you different things. Otherwise, you could find yourself in a bad situation real quickly. But
sure.
Most independent – the problem is when you're starting a small business or a film or whatever – most people that do that are independent-minded people. They have their own, you know, pave their own trailblazing path, and they're going to be the one that does it all differently and does it all great and stuff. The truth of the matter is, the more you go it alone, the more you usually end up alone and not where you want to be.
Interesting.
If you can actually connect with people that have gone before, it's kind of like the footprints in a snowy minefield. Try to follow those steps.
So you don't blow up.
So you don't blow up. So that is really my biggest takeaway. You know, it's important to protect yourself with the LLC. Also protect yourself on as much as you can, at least a bookkeeper. I mean, you can always get a CPA, an accountant later on. I mean, more of that kind of, you know, submitting out the taxes and all that kind of stuff down the road. But definitely have a good bookkeeper. And somebody, and at least somebody that's willing to give you some legal advice. If you can find somebody that'll do it for free at first until you can get established, that's really great. Or if they'll do it for a small fee, just in case you need a contract or something, you know, maybe they'll piecemeal it and charge you. There's some good lawyers out there.
Right.
Yeah, some of them are all about the money. Others are like, hey, I understand you're starting a small business and we can help you out here.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to just seek good advice. Protect yourself on the back end. In the front end, really know your product, know your service, know how to reach your audience. Find somebody a mentor out there. Maybe there's somebody on LinkedIn or something that you could reach out to that they'll say, yeah, I can help you with that, and they can put together an analytic process. Some of them use AI. I question that a little bit yet. Maybe down the road, AI analytics will have more value. But I would try to find somebody that has had experience in your business or a similar business as much as you can. And then get their advice on the proper steps. Follow those snowy footprints to keep from having the troubles that can occur. And if you do that, they can guide you into a right way. And some of them might be like some retired guy that's, you know, he has a mind, you know, make. But the biggest thing is be friendly with everybody. Here's the thing. Mentors and other people want to do business with people they like.
Yeah.
First.
Mm-hmm.
And if you come in there and you try to say, no, I'm an independent maker, whatever it is, of this or whatever, the service, whatever, and I don't need to listen to you, but, you know, just tell me this a little bit and I'm out of here. Why should they?
Yeah.
But if you can come in and say, man, I would like to be your neighbor and I bring you a pie every day or whatever like
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
You know, they're going to be like, yeah, I can tell you a few things. And you build relationships. And if you build these relationships right, they want to see, people really want to help you. People really want to see you succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes them feel good. I was responsible for that guy becoming a millionaire. You know? People like to feel good about themselves. And right. That's one way they can do it, is to help you be successful.
Interesting.
So I think if you just open your minds and your heart to that you're not alone in this, that you just need to ask the right questions, seek the right people, vet them. Don't just take someone's advice and think, oh, yeah, I'll do it this way. And then you find out that the guy's just a blowhard, because there's a lot of those people out there too.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can find somebody that's got some fruit on the tree, that is willing to share, and you can build a relationship with them, the Mount Everest isn't as hard to climb as you think. The people that take Mount Everest always take a guide. And most people that are starting their own independent business, they're taking Everest all by themselves.
Mm.
And then they wonder why they fail.
How can people find out more about you, and how can they contact you?
Yeah, well, I have my website, DallasMediaProductions.com, out there. I also have for my new movie, and I'd love to have everybody come and see my new movie. I have TheCaregiverMovie.com. Also, The Caregivers on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. So if you're on any of that social media stuff, we're posting some stuff about horror movies, about horror, haunted houses, things like that, just to kind of get people excited about a haunted house movie. Cool. That we've got coming produced. But as we get closer, we're hoping to be starting pre-production maybe around August or so, and we're hoping to be starting to get on set by October. But as we get closer to that, we'll start putting more content up that can start, people can start seeing. My hope is that as we get some actors on contract under pre-production signed to this, we can start getting them to do some podcasts, get them to start trying to help to get people aware of the fact, and people that like them as an actor may want to come and come and see the film that they do, right. And the director and all that stuff. So you're going to see more and more production of this as we go along. But stay connected.
So they can see the step by step process. Then
they can. They can actually kind of watch as we get closer and closer to actually becoming a full production, and they can hear the people that are going to be involved in it, they could just be like connected to filmmaking on an individual level.
Mm-hmm.
And not that they have to give me money or anything like that, but just to follow the process.
Right.
And just to check in and see what's happening. Because it's a fun ride for everybody, not just me. We're all in this one together. Let's go enjoy a movie together.
Good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.